Well, we're sort of in a bit of a mini-series, one that we didn't really plan, but we sort of stumbled into here this summer. It's a group of loosely related sermons that follow an outline from a passage we looked at several weeks ago from 1 Peter 4, 7 through 11. And in that sermon, we looked at three points, pray, love, and serve, based on that text. And didn't plan to then turn that into a little bit of a series where we took each of those then individually, pray, love, serve, and looked at them through alternate text as well. So we talked about praying. We looked through the Our Father prayer. We talked about how love each other deeply because love covers over a multitude of sins and offer hospitality without grumbling. And then we looked at the parable of the Good Samaritan and how Jesus completely redefines what it means to love. And that was last week. And then in the last part of the 1 Peter text, it talks about using the gifts we have to serve each other out of love as faithful stewards of God's grace. And so this week we kind of wrap up that text series or outline by looking at serving others with love. And it will build off a lot of what we talked about last week with the parable of the Good Samaritan. And, you know, I was just thinking as I was preparing this message that these messages, not in and of themselves, but what the Spirit can do with them, can just really transform a group of people. I mean, that if we just did these basic things, that if we prayed and if we loved and if we served the way the Bible defines them, I mean, just wow, what you would see. And of course, that's always the case. I mean, if we just did the things Jesus taught us to do, I mean, the transformation that we would see. And of course, it's a challenge and it's a work of the Spirit that helps us to do that. But I'm hopeful that as we are transformed by the Word, we begin to see that more and more. And I know we've spent a lot of emphasis on this. In fact, Hannah kind of jokingly but also seriously said, we need to stop preaching about loving others. Because I know it's been a big theme lately, but it's so unavoidable in the way when you look at the text and you look at Jesus. And when we looked at John 2 through 6 in that series, it was just, you know, it just kind of challenges us so much. But of course, the Bible does talk about other things, so we'll look to those too. But my title this morning is just a kind of a way to remember what I'm going to talk about. Here I am, there you are. And there's an outline on the back of your bulletin. And it's about what kind of person are you going to be? A here I am person or a there you are person. Of course, the golden rule is to do unto others as we'd have them do to us, the words of Jesus. And as we talked about last week, Jesus always gives a positive morality, right? He's saying, you know, do these things. It's not about trying to avoid things. That's sort of the religion Jesus was entering into. But actually what we do, that he's really the God of yes more than the God of no. And think for a second. I mean, really think, how do you want to be treated? How do you like to be treated? And then think about how then you can be that person to others. And I'm really quite convinced of something, that if we put just a little more of our energy and our thoughts into being what we want others to be to us, kind of being the change we sort of want to see in others, but instead reflecting on our own selves, then we would be much better off. And to do that, sometimes we need to be intentional. We need to kind of rework our way of thinking. But meaning, instead of kind of complaining about how somebody has wronged us or how we've been mistreated or hurt, we resolve in our hearts and do some serious praying and reflection about how we can make sure that we don't repeat that pattern off to others. We say, Lord, help me to, and then state it in a positive kind of way, the way Jesus does. Not help me not to be like so-and-so, but instead, Lord, help me to be this way, the way that you would like to be treated. You've probably heard of the expression, you know, becoming what you hate. And, you know, you start to, I think the older you get, the more you sort of fight that temptation sometimes. And it's a strong word, but the idea that we often become what we don't want, even what we least want to be, if we're not really careful and not intentional. Of course, the most classic example would be becoming like your parents, right? And, of course, my sister and I have joked about that a little bit this week from time to time, from different things. And, you know, that there are, including the flaws in the way that they hurt us, often you know, we say, well, I'll never be like that. But the older you get, you start to realize, like, I'm becoming like that if I'm not careful. And it's funny, but it's also, you know, can be kind of scary, right? When you realize it seemed like that would never be possible before. And then the older you get, you realize that, man, I really got to look out for this and be asking God to help me. So, I mean, if prayer just replaced some of our thinking and complaining about these things, about others, about situations, about governments, about churches even, just think if prayer replaced that energy that we use on those things, I mean, what would happen? What would happen? And I know it's kind of common here, you know, for us in Canada to complain about, roll our eyes a little bit about what's going on across the border with, you know, Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton. But I was kind of convicted recently about that. I was listening to the International House of Prayer 24/7 prayer stream, and I often have it on in my office just worshiping and praying, and have it on as I work. And just how they were passionately praying for those two. And they were praying that Hillary Clinton would pray for Donald Trump and that Donald Trump would pray for Hillary Clinton. And you know, we're laughing, but they were serious. I mean, they were praying for that. And I just thought, you know, I've been wrong. You know, how much time have I spent talking about this, but how much time have I spent praying about this? And there are lots of things in our lives, but that can be misplaced energy sometimes. And I just kind of felt a little bit convicted by it. But all this kind of thinking leads us into what I want to talk about this morning, the here I am, there you are, and kind of an easy way to think about and remember what I want to talk about, that are you a here I am person or a there you are person, meaning are your thoughts and actions more about, is it kind of, hey, here I am, or are you living to serve others in such a way that each day you're thinking, how can I love and serve someone today? When you walk into a room, do you kind of think, who's going to come talk to me and care for my needs? Or is it, who can I find to bless and encourage today? And I think that's kind of the difference between a here I am person and a there you are kind of person. So I want to talk about four ways to assess whether you're a here I am person or a there you are kind of person. And what would hopefully be four characteristics of a there you are kind of person. And rather than preach on one text, as we almost always do, this morning is a bit of a sampling of several texts and ideas, so I hope you don't mind. But the first area to consider to assess this question of what kind of person we are is, number one, the way you treat believers. So let's start with what hopefully would be the easiest one, the way you treat believers. Of course, we know that Jesus said in John 13, 34 and 35, that I give you a new command. Love one another. And then he gives this incredible challenge, as I have loved you, the way he has loved us, so you must love one another. And then he closes with the song that we sang at the end of the service last week, that this is how they will know that you are my disciples, if you love one another. So the here I am perspective, when it comes to how we treat believers, would say something like, yeah, I'm a Christian, but man, I really can't stand Christians. And that's kind of common attitude sometimes. They come to church maybe to be served and not to serve. The here I am person wants to be noticed for their good deeds instead of noticing others for their good deeds. Wants to be complimented instead of complimenting. Looks for ways to draw attention to themselves instead of giving attention to others. But the there you are perspective when it comes to believers first is secure and understands God's unfailing love for them. And it all starts there. When we're secure in God's love for us and his feelings for us, then we're able to be a there you are person. That there you are person has a deep love for God's people, comes to church to serve others, is always encouraging and complimenting others, even at their own expense. Doesn't need to be constantly noticed to continue to do something. Prays for fellow believers, cares about the needs of others, and is always thinking, how can I bless someone today? So the way you treat believers is important. The second way gets a little more challenging as we go to assess here I am versus there you are kind of person is the way you treat your enemies or those that you dislike. Jesus sets the standard once again by saying, you have heard that it was said, love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I tell you, love your enemies, and pray for those who persecute you, that you may be children of your Father in heaven. He causes his sun to rise on the evil and the good and sends rain on the righteous and the unrighteous. If you love those who love you, what reward will you get? Are not even the tax collectors doing that? And if you greet only your own people, what are you doing more than others? Do not even pagans do that? And the word enemy that Jesus uses, the Greek word, refers to those whose actions and words really manifest hatred towards you. That's the word that Jesus chose to use. And when we treat them in this way, this is, of course, as Jesus says earlier in chapter 5, how others will notice the difference, that he says they may see your good deeds and glorify God. So people will find it curious and pay attention. I mentioned the text that I read this last week in the sermon because I'd read it that week, and it just continues to blow me away. I keep reading it and meditating on it from Exodus 23, 4 and 5, and just showing that this is a part of the heart of God, even the Old Testament ethic of how we treat others and how it's so different and so radical. Where it says in the law, if you come across your enemy's ox or donkey wandering off, be sure to return it. If you see the donkey of someone who hates you fallen down under its load, do not leave it there. Be sure you help them with it. And I mean, in the ancient Near Eastern culture, if you look at the laws of the other people groups around the Israelites, you don't find anything like this. So the heart of God was so different. This would have been so radical in that culture, and still is. And then Jesus carried that on and took it a step further. And of course, Jesus tells us in Luke 6, 31 to 36, to do to others as you would have them do to you. If you love those who love you, what credit is that to you? Even sinners love those who love them. If you lend to those from whom you expect repayment, what credit is that to you? Even sinners lend to sinners, expecting to be repaid in full. But love your enemies, do good to them and lend to them without expecting to get anything back. Then your reward will be great and you will be children of the Most High, because He, God, is kind to the ungrateful and the wicked. So be merciful just as your Father is merciful. So when it comes to treating our enemies, the here I am perspective would be somebody who loves only those who love them in return, who loves only those who can benefit them and will give them something in return, who loves maybe only Christians or maybe their version or their kind of Christians, does good only to those who will take notice and give them proper credit, and fails to treat others the way God has treated them. But the there you are perspective loves everyone with the same love, as we talked about last week, regardless of their worth or worthiness of that love. That was what Jesus was trying to say. Loves their enemies and those who hate them and speak badly of them, prays for those who mistreat them and others. I mean, prayer transforms us. And if there's bitterness or hate or envy in your hearts, probably the best medicine or the best advice I would give is when you try, as hard as it is, to pray for that person and bring them before the Father, there's just something that takes place in your heart when you do that. When you pray for those who have wronged you or hurt you, and because God just begins to transform your heart and it begins to give you new perspective. And that's the point of prayer, is it transforms us. It changes us into God's image. There you are, person repays evil with good, loves people who do not love them back. So we treat believers a certain way, enemies a certain way. And then another way we assess, am I a here I am person or a there you are person, is the way you treat the unloved, or we could say, what the Bible often talks about, the last, the least, the looked over, the left behind, the left out, the unpopular, the poor, the needy, the hurting, the outcast, the friendless, the one who sits alone everywhere they go, the one who finds himself without friends. Throughout Scripture, God constantly loves the unlovable. And those times might have been the widow, the orphan, the poor, the leper, the tax collector, the prostitute, the demon-possessed. Philippians 2, 3, and 4 tells us to do nothing out of selfish ambition, but in humility to value others above yourselves. Each person above yourself, not looking to your own interest, but each of you to the interest of others. What Philippians 2, 3, and 4 is saying, be a there you are person, not a here I am kind of person. And so the here I am perspective would ignore those who maybe are not as intelligent or not as together as they are. They hold contempt for people who maybe are less civilized or just don't look the same as them. Tears others down to build themselves up, thinks they are better than others, and fails to see people as masterpieces, creations of God. But the there you are perspective pays special attention to the unloved, despite what others may think, has a heart of compassion for those who are on the outskirts of society, is a friend to those who are friendless, builds others up, and sees all people as God's special creation and masterpiece. And of course, the main point of all this and the main motivation is what Jesus teaches us in Matthew 25, that whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers and sisters of mine, you did for me. I was watching a mini kind of story documentary on Mother Teresa since she's coming up on sainthood, and this is their whole motto, their whole perspective, is that the way we see Christ more than anywhere else is through the lives of the poor and the lonely. And in fact, these others are given to us as a grace so that we might encounter Christ, that without them we can't fully know Jesus, for he himself was despised, was poor, was lonely. And so we can't really know Jesus if there aren't people like that in our lives, because that was a big part of who he is. And that's the whole perspective of the order that she formed and founded. So the ability to love in these three ways can really only be found in Christ through his love working in us. And we have to, again, be sort of intentional in thinking this way. I have in my prayer notebook just prayers that I organize, a big computer file of my prayers, and that I organize under daily prayers for others. And here's some of the things that I pray, and I'd be glad to send these to you if you think they'd be helpful. But I just pray these things. Lord, put someone in my path I can serve and show the love of Christ to today. Lord, show me when and how I can pray for others today as I see them and interact with them. Let my spirit be aware of those opportunities which will come. Holy Spirit, bring to my remembrance what is going on in other people's lives, issues they are facing, loved ones who are sick, big moments in their life, accomplishments they have received. Remind me to ask them about these things so they know they are cared for. Let me weep with those who weep and rejoice with those who are rejoicing today. Let me encourage others today and always look for an opportunity to build someone up and crucify my pride that would want to hold on to those compliments and encouragements. Let me think more about others than myself as I'm around people today. And through my life and because I live today, let there be a little more love and kindness, a little more light and truth in the world. And the reason I have to pray these things is because they don't come naturally to me. I wish they did. I wish I was just naturally such an other-centered person, but I'm really not. And so I have to, every day, kind of rework my heart and my mind to be aware and to be sensitive to how the Lord might want to work through me, because it comes hard to do. So who do you want to be? You want to be a here I am person or a there you are person? And really what we mean by that is, do you want to be like Jesus? And the last way we assess this, just very briefly, is of course the way you treat God. Because these ways and attitudes of thinking translate then into our relationship with God. Is it only kind of, God, here I am. Bless me. Take care of me. Take care of my needs. Do this or do that for me. Or is it, God, there you are. It's all about you. Make me more like you. Transform me more and more into your image. How do you approach God? A few ways I think to respond is, number one, of course, we ask for forgiveness for all the ways in our lives that we are a here I am person. And in just a second, as we prepare for communion, we'll confess together through acts of confession. Number two, we ask for the heart of God to be able to see people like he does, that we can't do this on our own. And then, of course, we just get involved in serving others. When we do that, then we begin to allow God to work through us. So as we think about and prepare for communion and to come to the table, of course, we would think about where it all should come back to, which is Jesus, the ultimate there you are person, who was thinking about you as he lived his life, as he died on the cross, and still does today. And of course, the greatest example comes on the same night as the one that we are remembering right now through communion, when we think about Jesus washing the feet of the disciples. And as we've talked about, it was common for the lowest person at the table in the room to wash everyone's feet after they've traveled there. And so the disciples are kind of all thinking, here I am. I came all this way. I cleared my schedule to be here. Who's going to wash my feet? And if anyone had the right to be thinking, here I am that night, of course it was Jesus, the Son of God, who is about to give himself for others and for the life of the world. And yet, even in these last moments, Jesus shows us what it means to be a there you are kind of person. In fact, that night, the Last Supper, Jesus actually exemplifies all four of these points or categories that we looked at this morning. He shows his love for the believers, these disciples who would represent the first believers in the church. He shows his love for his enemies, for Judas was about to betray him, and yet he still offers himself to Judas at the table. He shows his love for the unloved as he gathers around these tax collectors and some of these outcasts of society to be his first disciples. And he shows his love and obedience to the Father by saying, not my will, but yours, O Lord, as he goes to the cross. So the best example of these four kind of there you are characteristics comes straight from Jesus himself, even on the last night that he spent on earth. And so as it should, it all comes back to Jesus. Do you want to be like him? This is who he is. He's a there you are kind of person. And when his love and presence come into your life and begin to transform you, and it drives out all the here I am kind of thinking. And so we need to ask ourselves, is there evidence of that in my life? I mean, it's easy to say I want to be like Jesus. But then when you get to look at his radical life and the teachings that we've looked at over this summer through some of our series, I mean, have just blown us away, right? At the way he acts and the things are just amazing, right? And it becomes a little scarier to say, I want to be like Jesus when you start looking in depth to the way he lived his life. But I hope that in those good moments, like myself, I think, I really do love this man. And even though he's everything I'm not, he's also everything I want to be. And so I keep asking the Spirit to help change me and transform me and make me more like him. And if that's your heart, I really think he will help you, and the Spirit of God will help you. In one place, we get to know him and are transformed by him, sometimes even in a mysterious way, is through this table, through his body, and through his blood given for us as we invite him and his presence into our very beings.